If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that Wednesdays are kind of reserved for talking about our environment and our natural resources of the state. And oftentimes our guests come from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources when we deal with these topics. And today's no exception. We talked about invasive plant species. Well, now we're going to talk about some animals that we really like and would like to keep, if at all possible, and not get rid of, our Wisconsin herpetiles. And a couple of guests for you today. Rory Pulaski is a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. She works with herpetiles in general, and has particular knowledge about our reptiles. Rory, hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us. And Terry Bergeson is also a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. She works especially with amphibians. So you're the amphibian gal, huh?
That's right, Larry. It's great to be here today.
Great to have you with us. You may have questions about our reptiles and amphibians. What are you seeing out there? And what concerns might you have? Or just what curiosities might you have about them? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo or a question on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And herpetiles. That's a phrase that you don't hear all that often, Tara.
That's right. And so when we talk about herpetiles, we are talking about amphibians and reptiles collectively. And so we're here today to talk about herpetiles.
And so most people probably have a general idea, but reptiles and amphibians, obviously there's differences between the two.
That's right. So I could start out and tell you a little bit about amphibians. So one of the things I always like to tell people about amphibians is a little bit of trivia maybe that folks might not know. The word amphibian actually means dual life. And so our amphibians in Wisconsin have a dual life cycle. So meaning that they spend part of their life cycle in the water and part of the life cycle on land. And for this reason, we think of them as being important indicators of the environmental health of our rivers and streams and wetlands, mm-hmm. And in general, the habitats that they live in. All of our amphibians in Wisconsin, frogs and salamanders, with the exception of one salamander, lay eggs and start their life cycle in the water. My personal favorite, the red-backed salamander, happens to be the exception to that rule, and those little salamanders who like wooded areas actually lay their eggs on the ground and don't spend any time in the water.
Now, why is that your favorite salamander?
Well, I could go to the long story, which I happened to meet my husband when he was studying them.
Oh.
But I just think that they're really cool little critters, maybe partly because they do break the rule and they don't have the aquatic life cycle. They're just, you know what? They're kind of cute, Larry.
Well, that's a good enough reason for me. Rory, what about your side of things?
So the reptiles, and Tara and I both work on both amphibians and reptiles a little bit as well. So the reptiles, in contrast from the amphibians, are more terrestrial. So they're more typically associated with drier habitats, very generally speaking. Obviously, our turtles, they nest on the... our aquatic turtles nest in dry land, but obviously spend quite a bit of their life cycle in the water. We do have one species, the ornate box turtle, which is more in the tortoise-type family, and it spends its entire life in dry upland areas. So the reptiles in Wisconsin, we have snakes, lizards, and turtles, which make up our reptiles here.
Yeah, and several of them, or quite a few anyway, are endangered, are they not?
Yeah, we have a fair number that are either endangered or threatened, and those are a legal designation that affords them protection. We also have quite a few that are special concern, which are kind of our in-between species. They're not common, they're not super rare. You know, either they're kind of in between or we want more information. So those are on our species of special concern list.
Yeah, and amphibians, same?
We have one endangered frog species in Wisconsin, and that's the northern cricket frog. And that's actually it. So we do have some special concern amphibians. And the other thing I just wanted to mention about special concern is that when we think of the special concern species, we're really wanting to think about them proactively. And so trying to manage habitat and manage those populations before they become threatened or endangered, when it becomes more costly to protect them.
Talking today with a couple of great guests about Wisconsin's herpetiles, Rory Pulaski and Tara Bergeson from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, our guests. You can join in with your own question or comment at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Margaret in Richland County has a question. Margaret, hi.
Hello.
Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for having your guests on. I really appreciate their work and their knowledge. We're on an old dairy farm in southwest Wisconsin, and we have a nice-sized retention pond that supports a tremendous population of different frogs and now some turtles. Well, I'm just wondering what turtles feed on and if perhaps it would be a good idea to add some feeder fish to this retention pond. If so, what? And also to support the turtles, is there some kind of enhancement of habitat that we can create? Hmm. I just have a whole list of questions.
Yeah, great questions.
Go ahead and fire away. I'll listen.
All right. Rory, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I'm first very jealous of this pond you have. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
For the turtles themselves, if you're seeing turtles there already, they're probably having most of their, you know, habitat and food needs met. So I wouldn't stock the pond with fish. They could eat those, but primarily because the fish are actually a large predator of frog eggs. So there could be competition there with the frogs then if you would like to keep the frogs in the pond. Mm-hmm. I think what I would tend to do is more on the habitat side for the turtles and make sure you keep or even add if you have any down trees in the pond that you can add, you know, for shelter, for basking for the turtles. Most of the turtle species in Wisconsin nest fairly close to water or can nest fairly close to water. So having an open area, suitable habitat for nesting, which would be an open area, sandy soils nearby, that would be good habitat if they're looking for something to nest in. But in terms of the pond directly, I would keep the fish out because of the frogs, although that would provide them some food. But they sound like if they've been there for a while, they're finding food on their own. So I would go more towards the habitat management side and add some structure to the pond for them.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Carol in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Yes, good morning. I'm aware that there have been recent sightings of deformed frogs around the country, and I'm wondering if for frog deformity is an issue in Wisconsin.
Oh, another good question. And what about it, Tara?
Well, we have had reports of deformed frogs within Wisconsin, probably like most other states. There is the U.S. Geological Survey in the past has had a malformations or a reporting center for deformed frogs. We don't have one of our own at the DNR right now. I don't believe that we have had any huge reports of, large groups of deformed frogs in Wisconsin at this point. There's also a background natural rate of deformed frogs. So it is possible too that if you're seeing deformed frogs, that it could be something that a frog was born with. Sometimes you'll see a frog with a missing limb if a predator has tried to get it and the frog has managed to get away. It's a good question, and it's something that, you know, we're certainly interested in and keep our eyes out for. And I guess I would tell people that if they do come across deformed frogs and they're concerned, they can certainly report it to us and we'd be happy to know about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Carol. Thank you for calling. Paul in Little Suamico, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Or afternoon. Pretty close. I had a question. I've got see a common gray tree frog around the house fairly often, but every couple of years I see one, same size. It's an iridescent green. I mean, it literally almost sparkles in the light. I was wondering if you had any idea what species that was.
How about it, Tara?
Well, great question, and good for you for picking up on the difference and appreciating how cool those frogs, tree frogs, can look. So we have, most people, when they think of the tree frogs in Wisconsin, I think about the two tree frog species, the Cope's gray tree frog and the gray tree frog. In fact, the tree frog family includes a few of our other species as well. So the cricket frog is actually in the tree frog family. Arboreal chorus frog is considered a tree frog, as well as our spring peeper. But the Cope's gray tree frog and the gray tree frog are fairly common throughout the state. The gray tree frog's range extends throughout the state. The Cope's gray tree frog isn't quite so much in the north, and also not found really in the driftless area of southwestern Wisconsin. It could be the Cope's gray tree frog that you're seeing and describing. Both of these tree frogs can really change in appearance and blend in with the environment. So depending on where you're seeing it, if you're seeing it on a patch of grass, for example, it might really take on a pretty bright green color. The best way to actually distinguish between the Cope's gray tree frog and the gray tree frog is to listen for their call. And the Cope's gray tree frog has a shorter, kind of what we maybe describe as a little bit more raspy call than the gray tree frog.
Okay, yeah, because they had, usually I'd see them late evening, sometimes early in the morning. We remodeled a few years ago and took out our bathroom window, but a lot of times I'd have them at night. To be actually stuck up on the screen if the window was open. I don't know if it was the humidity from the bathroom that
yeah.
they were attracted or what. Or I would see them when the girls were small. We had a swimming pool, and I'd find them perched on the edge of the swimming pool sometimes.
Yep, that's both of those scenarios are fairly common, and we hear about that. The tree frogs are, after they've done their breeding at their breeding ponds in the spring, they will move away from the water, and you can find them really throughout the rest of the season in, more terrestrial areas. They're pretty commonly seen around houses, and yep, I've seen them on screens, and we hear of people getting them around their pools as well, probably seeking out some moisture.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Paul. Appreciate it. We had Jan Marie called and wanted to make sure that people know to be careful when they're driving. There are a lot of turtles that are looking for nesting places, and that often includes crossing roads. So that's an issue.
Yeah, and this is...
Try to avoid them. Don't try to run over them.
No, definitely not. And this is the time of year from late May through very early July that the females are really moving, migrating to try to find their nesting spot. So people typically see the most turtles at this time of year.
And I did see a report that you have to be careful. Someone was, an older gentleman was hit by a truck within the last week moving and attempting to move a turtle across a road. So
yeah, he unfortunately didn't see the vehicle. He said he had looked for it, but it sounds like he's going to be okay.
You're going to be okay?
He was happy he got the turtle across as well. So
okay. Rory Pulaski and Tara Bergeson from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, our guests right up until 12:30 today. We're going to take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Taking a look at reptiles and amphibians here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with two guests from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Rory Pulaski and Tara Bergeson. Great to have them along. Thank you so much for listening in. You know, ponds and pond life support the lives of many of our snakes and our amphibians and reptiles. And it's time for Wisconsin Life little feature that we've got that has to do with ephemeral ponds. Ephemeral ponds are here today, gone tomorrow, especially in the spring. And writer Jill Sisson-Quinn shares why she loves these ponds and the wonders she's found within them.
I love ephemeral ponds, depressions that fill with snowmelt in spring and are gone by midsummer. I love them because they breed such strange things. I like to put my hands in them and pull out oozing globes of wood frog eggs and the tighter, cloudier, golf ball-sized spawn of spotted salamanders. The eggs fill my supplicating palms like nothing else can. Almost always, the clucking of wood frogs and squeaking of spring peepers at ephemeral ponds is so fervent and ear-splitting, it feels more like witnessing the worst of humans than anything of nature. Too many creatures in too little space, all vying for the same thing. But ephemeral ponds warrant such clamor, because they are very special. Too fleeting to harbor fish, they provide a safe place for the development of insects and sensitive amphibians such as these. One year, along the banks of one, I found a colony of toads in mud caves like monks in cells, though likely contemplating females. Unable to resist, I later played with their eggs, coiling pairs of beaded gelatinous strings through my fingers. I like to climb out on logs or limbs that have fallen into ephemeral ponds and sit for long periods in the middle. I like to stare into the water until something surprising comes along, and it always does, a red-spotted newt suspended like some kind of nebula in outer space. I always try to catch him, a kind of blind hunt where I poise my hand in the air above his head, then thrust it suddenly into the water with absolutely no hesitation. I always miss. But the strangest thing I have seen at an ephemeral pond you will not even believe. Each spring, I used to take my students across the street from Stevens Point Area Senior High to Schmeekly Reserve, where ephemeral ponds appear most years along the Granite Trail. I'd give them a poem to interpret and paper to journal on about the signs of spring, space them out along the pools, and set them free. One year, I used an E.E. Cummings poem, one part of which reads in Cummings' unconventional syntax, "Spring is like a perhaps hand in a window, carefully to and fro moving new and old things." Despite my constant reminders that the students not disturb anything at the reserve, they would often gather some kind of souvenir, a goose feather, a star flower. Once I watched a student touch a fawn he suddenly noticed was curled up a few feet from where he was sitting. But on this day, one of my students emerged from the network of pools with her completed journal entry and, get this, a rubber hand, or rather, the forearm and hand of a doll. She thought I had planted it to go with the poem for someone to find. Not so. It was a little bit creepy, but I think I got the message. Put your hands in it, because nature can be fleeting.
Commentator Jill Sisson-Quinn, nature writer in central Wisconsin, writing for Wisconsin Life, produced by Erica Janik, by the way. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. And if you'd like to know a little bit more, go to our website at wisconsinlife.org and find them on the Facebook. So, and ephemeral ponds?
Yes.
Great.
Well, right. I love that little piece. I think there's a special place where art and nature meet, and that was a great example of it. And it's true, ephemeral ponds provide very important habitat for many of our herp species in Wisconsin.
Tara Bergeson with those comments. Rory Pulaski with us as well from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources as we talk with them about our Wisconsin reptiles and amphibians. And, you know, Katarina from Boscobel has been waiting a very long time. I want to give her a chance to get on. Katarina, thank you so much for waiting. And what's on your mind? Oh, just a minute. Now, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I noticed, because I drive between Boscobel and Wazika regularly, that when they redid the road, I believe it's Highway 60 that runs north and west and east there, that the turtle population dropped, oh, I would say probably 90% in about 2 years, because they put down those barriers to keep the rocks from the bluffs falling down into the road, but they didn't leave any little turtle tunnels, and so the turtles couldn't get through to the where they laid their eggs. And so you very rarely see turtles there anymore, and so many of them get hit, the few that do go across. And it was very, I mean, it was just sad to see the change. And yet I understand what they did with the road, too. But they could have put little turtle tunnels under those cement barriers that, you know, sometimes you see them with an opening.
Yeah. Comment on that, Rory?
Yeah, you know, there's several types of road construction that can be done that could harm turtles. There's fortunately several types that can benefit them as well. And as the caller mentioned, you know, a lot of times when new roads are going in, cement barriers are put up and it prevents the turtles from getting where they're going. A lot of times what is referred to as riprap, which is large rocks that are put in place to stabilize a bank or a shoreline, those can be so large, those are used for stabilization, but they can be so large that they prevent the passage of turtles as well, just because it's so hard for them to crawl over the rocks. And unfortunately, the little hatchlings, which are about an inch and a half long, can get stuck in the little rock crevices and can't get out. luckily, we're also, you know, have also been working with a lot of the DOT locations around the state, as people have been in the other parts of the country as well. A lot of times those barriers can be beneficial as well if they're put in the correct place. A lot of times, I'm sure everyone has seen where a road goes through, it looks like it was put in through a wetland. You have a great wetland or pond on the left and right side of the road. And those are usually some of our high mortality areas for turtles because they're trying to cross from one side to the other or from a wetland to a nesting area. So barriers can be used in some of those locations. We can put what we call a turtle underpass under the road, and it allows the turtles to move under the road so they're not crossing above. And the barriers would then be used in addition to that to help funnel them to that spot so they can't cross the road anywhere, but they have to use the underpass. And one of the things we've been working on in the last year or two with citizen monitors in the state, and we have a website for it as well, is our turtle conservation program in Wisconsin. And we're looking for reports from citizens, either of, unfortunately, of mortality of turtles on roads or even just high areas of turtle crossings, even if the turtles can make it. Reports from people around the state, and our hope is long-term management for those species that will be able to pinpoint those high traffic areas and really work to get underpasses put in there to help the turtles.
And talking about, you know, tracking the animals and tracking these trends, obviously you need to have accurate information on population numbers and locations. You recently got some unusual help with that. We've got some photos up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and I hope people go to it. Tell us about the dogs.
Yeah, this, I have to admit, this was one of the funnest projects I've worked on in a long time. We had an individual out of Tennessee, John Rucker, who has a small little herd pack, I guess, of Boykin Spaniels. They're bird hunting dogs, and he's trained them to smell out turtles and to retrieve turtles. So our little box turtles, which get to be about 5 inches big. And so we hired him for 5 days in May to come up. And we took him to several of our ornate box turtle sites in southern Wisconsin. And we went out with the dogs, and the dogs are trained to walk around with us. And they're constantly looking for scent trails, smelling out turtles. And they would, you know, catch the turtles. They're trained with water balloons, so they have very gentle mouths. They'd retrieve the turtles and bring them back to us. And so we did surveys at almost all of our box turtle sites in Wisconsin with the dogs, and they were pretty amazing. They definitely
and they find more than people.
Yeah, they definitely outshine the humans. Yes.
So that is very, very cool. And there's great photos of that, and there are, Judith's just letting me know too, there are a lot of great photos from listeners on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And so we've got some wonderful photos. Here's one that, I don't know, if, can you see that one, Rory and Tara?
Yeah, the first one there that we have from Ed is a leopard frog.
Leopard frog, yep.
Yep.
I would have guessed that. And then from Tim, we have a very small turtle.
Yeah, it's difficult to see for sure, but the plaster on that underside shell on the turtle is orange, so it's most likely a hatchling painted turtle.
Painted, yeah. And here's another one.
Yeah, that looks like
Another one from Ed. Looks like a great photo of a tree frog, and I think that kind of probably looks like one that our earlier caller was describing with that really pretty bright green background. And you can see, if you're looking at that photo, how the grass behind the frog is green. And so the frog is really blending right in with that pretty grass.
And here's another one. Whoops, where did it go? I skipped ahead. Here we go. Frog or a toad found in the garden. Looks
like another tree frog.
Yeah, looks like another tree frog to me. And here is a white toad on a mini golf course in Door County. Sarah found this past weekend. Is that right, Rory? Do you want to take that?
Yeah, that's actually the same species. They're pretty amazing. It's either the gray tree frog or the Cope's gray tree frog. Yeah, they can change colors, like Tara had mentioned, similar to how chameleons do based on their surrounding. And obviously this one, for people that aren't looking at this, it's sitting on a white rope.
It looks like a fungus.
Yeah, it does. And they are bumpy. You know, people do confuse those fairly often with toads because they have that really rough skin.
Oh, and let's just maybe do one more here right now from Eric.
That's
a gray tree frog.
Yep, that's another gray tree frog. They can range from that almost white gray to dark gray to brown to green, just depending on their surroundings. They'll adjust their coloring.
So lots of great photos on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You don't have to be a member of Facebook, by the way, to see those photos. So I hope you'll go to them and take a look, because lots of pretty cool photos, as well as the photos of the dogs going after and finding the turtles.
Yeah, they were impressive. And like we were saying, they were much better than the humans. The best site we went to was in Rock County, and we were out for an hour and a half, and the dogs found 19 turtles, which was about one every 6 minutes, we calculated, which is about as quick as his best sites that this researcher, John, has found. So the dogs found 19, and we had a volunteer out with us that found one. So it was 19-1.
It was just a ton of fun to watch the dogs work. I'm sure that, you know, I think for me it was a little bit of a clue as to what bird hunters really enjoy about seeing their dogs work with birds, because those dogs, you could tell when they found a trail and they started to hone in and their tails would kind of start to wag. It was very neat.
We have something referring back to the little piece we played on ephemeral ponds and turtles. There's a large pond along 11th Street just outside of Trempolo, and it was Chris, saw a 20-inch snapping turtle in there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, the snapping turtles are a pretty generalist species, and by that I mean they can use any type of water, pond, lake, and they can live in, you know, sometimes retention ponds or ditches that get pretty dirty. They're in most water supplies, rivers, lakes throughout the state. So
and there was kind of a pretty tough incident, terrible incident, with a snapping turtle being attacked by a person in the Delavan area, if I'm not what.
Yeah,
you know
that
about
was
that?
Yeah, a horrible situation just in the last couple of days. There's actually a reward out for that. It happened on a golf course, and someone, it appears, the turtle has, it looked fine in the morning when someone saw it. A few hours later, it had holes in its shell. Someone had hit it in the face, in the eye, with what appears to be a golf club. And they were hoping to do a surgery on it today, I believe, but it unfortunately passed away. And they're offering a $1,000 reward for anyone that has information on who did that to the turtle.
Yeah, and if anyone listening does have information, we'd encourage folks to call the DNR hotline, and callers can stay anonymous when they call. But that number is 1-800-847-9367.
1-800-847-9367.
That's right.
I think we probably have that posted. Yeah, we do have that up on my Facebook page as well, at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. That's a terrible thing to have happened, and hopefully we'll get the person who find the person who actually did it. On a much more fun and exciting note, we had an exciting find in Wisconsin last fall. A lined snake, Rory?
Our line snake, yes. It was actually someone that we work with just a little bit. He was out looking for another rare species, the Plains garter snake, and just happened to, he was at a prairie, just happened to be looking for this other species and found the line snake, which had never been recorded in Wisconsin before. Gets up into Illinois and actually southwestern Minnesota, not southeastern Minnesota. It's kind of spotty in this part of the country, but it was a brand new species for us in Wisconsin. And we still have just the one site, but we've been out there several times to the site since then. It's in southwestern Wisconsin. And we've found up to about 7 or 8 in a day, including juveniles and adults, which is usually what you look for a healthy population, is that you have all ranges of ages, too. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. And yeah. In a prairie environment.
It was a prairie, yep.
So environment, you know, depending on the amphibian or reptile, is so important. And we lose those environments, we lose the reptiles or the amphibians.
That's right. And I like to mention, too, that I think this is also a good example of sometimes if we just go looking for things, we actually end up finding things that we didn't think we had, or we end up finding more of something that we didn't realize were as common as they were. So it highlights the point for long-term monitoring efforts for our herps in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Natalia in Oshkosh had a question for you, so let's go to her. Hi, Natalia.
Hi.
Hi, Annie. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's that question?
Well, in our yard, we have long grass around our trees, and we usually have toads lurking around in the tall grass, and I'm wondering why.
Well, thanks for the question. Toads are one of our more common amphibian species in Wisconsin, and so I'm not surprised that you see them. And they're probably toads, like some of our other frogs in the state. Once they have done their breeding in the ponds in the spring, they spread out across the landscape, and they do spend quite a bit of time on land. And so the frogs that you're seeing in the tall grass around your trees are probably doing a couple things. They might be looking for food, and they're probably also finding shelter and maybe even a little shade and moisture in that tall grass there.
Mm.
So enjoy them.
Yeah. Thanks, Natalia. Appreciate your call. And always good to hear from our younger listeners. Tony in Sand County. Hi.
Hello. Question. I'm a recent transplant from southeastern Wisconsin out to Adams County. Sandy kind of areas out here.
Yep.
Run into a toad frog, which you may have been talking about already. It looked, when I first saw it, like a little lump of concrete with dark stones and light stones in it. And it was just on the edge of my deck, sort of hanging out there, and after a while it started moving around. Is it the toad you were or the frog you were talking about earlier?
My guess is that it's probably a tree frog. It could be a toad, but I'm guessing that it's probably a tree frog. And like we've mentioned a little earlier, those tree frogs are really good at blending into whatever surface that they're sitting on. And so it makes perfect sense to me that if you're seeing it sitting on some concrete, that it would look like a little lump of concrete sitting there.
Huh. Now, the other question I have, talking about temporary ponds, real sandy ground and everything kind of soaks in. What would you recommend for making a temporary pond? I don't have much clay around to line it, but what would be a good natural way of sort of setting up a little spot like that?
You know, I'm going to have to say that is a bit beyond my area of knowledge as far as creating a pond.
You might want to look, in a case like that, you might want to be looking for a lined pond where... You know, there are opportunities there, and I'm sure if you go to your local garden center, you're going to find liners and whole pond setups. But, man, it's tough in the sandy areas, isn't it, Rory?
It is, yeah. And there's actually quite a large I don't want to say industry, but group of research and conservation going on with wetland restoration. And those are the types of folks that really would know what to do for that in that type of habitat. But I agree. I think some kind of lining in the pond, and it could be some type of clay lining or something natural as well. But there's quite a few wetland restoration folks in the state. I would start personally just by Googling that, and they would be great at helping you out with that.
Okay. Thank you, Tony, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Here we are about out of time. David wondered about poisonous snakes. We do have two kinds of and in 10 seconds, can you give us the two that we have?
Sure. We have, two species, the Massasauga rattlesnake. It's in the lowland areas, and they're incredibly rare, 5 sites in the state. And then we have the timber rattlesnake, which is a little bit more common in our bluff species on some of the bigger rivers.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I hope we have a chance to do this again. You guys are great, and please come back and be with us again.
That'd be great.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it very much. Rory Pulaski and Tara Bergeson, our guests today, who are with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, know a whole lot about amphibians and reptiles here in the state, and it's really a lot of fun talking with them today. They know their business, that's for sure. And you know your business, too. Thank you so much for listening in today. And I hope you'll stay with us through the afternoon. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening.